My talk is in the spirit of Christian, in the sense that, okay, so what do we want to study when we study networks? So, and there has been some debate about it. So there are some people that they want to model a network exactly. Okay, and then there are some people that are just looking about what are relevant metrics, okay? What does it make sense to measure? Because people, you know, if you let them measure, they'll measure everything. Okay, so what are the relevant metrics, and why do we measure them? Why are they relevant? How can we, and in fact, bring the communities together? Not only how are they relevant, but how can they be used? Okay, so my talk is more in the spirit of Christian's talk, and this is the usual preamble that I give, but I don't need to give it in this room, just to say that there are all these different communities that have come together to study, you know, this remarkable data that we get from the internet at all kinds of levels that we study. And one particular level that I have studied and I will talk about, I will talk about several levels, but this is just one, is the internet at the level of autonomous systems. A node is, you can think of a node as an ISP, and there is an edge between two different nodes if the two ISPs are involved in direct exchange of traffic. This is a good model. So I stand between theoretical computer science and networking, and this is a good model if you stand on the theory end, because more or less all the nodes are the same. So if you forget, you know, about the leaves, like nodes that have degree one or two, roughly all ISPs, I mean, there are not huge differences. It's like a peer-to-peer network. Roughly all the peers are roughly the same. It's not like a network at the router level, which, where, you know, nodes can be extremely different. It's very different the node that comes to my home from, you know, the node that connects New York to Washington, D.C., or the link that connects, you know, New York to Washington, D.C. Okay, so we're studying networks, and so now in the area of complex networks, you know, some people study also social networks or even biological networks, and these are a little bit harder to pin down because the very thing that the network does is not clear. Like when you're studying a biological network, you know, what does the network do? So if you study communication networks, it becomes a little bit easier because some networks like the web, the internet, peer-to-peer, ad hoc, mobile, and so on, it becomes a little bit easier because the reason that the network has formed is very clear, okay? These are searching or routing networks. And in design, simulation, performance analysis, and evaluation of these networks, it is important to know what measure, or what parameters or metrics you are going to measure. And they have to be, you know, predictive of network structure because you want to match the data, but also predictive of network function or performance. And to make a very short history, you know, to say how the history went. So, in particular for this layer of the internet at the level of autonomous systems, the first measurements showed that the expected degree, so as the network was, as this layer was scaling, the expected degree was 4. So a very sparse graph, but no sharp concentration around the mean, and this was denoted by power law distributions that, you know, we all talk about. I shall come back to this 4 later on. So why should the degree be 4? I think by now it has become like 4.5. Why isn't it the degree 6 or 7? You know, what is? So, okay, so the first measurements were that these were sparse graphs with very large degree variance. It was measured that they had the so-called small world phenomenon, which means small diameter, but high clustering coefficients, where clustering was measured in terms of numbers of triangles, or, you know, small cliques or things like that these networks had. And also, I think it was Mark Newman that measured that node degree correlation. So do large nodes tend to connect to other large was the first, but several people have observed, you know, have better degree correlations and have classified them as assortative or disassortative and so on. These are mostly metrics that predictive or explanatory of network structure. Not necessarily this one. This is still not understood. And I want to say, like, the same way I think today I'm making the case for spectral metrics, or I'm about to make it, I think there is a case to be made here that is not understood. Yes.
What is the blue and the red?
Yeah, so if you do the log-log plot, a parallel graph looks like a straight line. If you had an Erdos-Remy sparse graph, it would have looked like this. So just to say that it was, you know, very different graphs than Erdos-Remy. Okay. So my proposal, initial proposal with my group was to look at the metric of conductance, or the largest eigenvalues of the suitable normalization of this, or related adjacency matrices. And why? Okay, so before I say why we should look at that, let's see what are the relevant questions that one has to ask. So here are the networking questions. How does delay scale with number of nodes, packet drop, and so on? You can list them. All these I'm abstracting as routing congestion. You know, for a theoretician, this has to do with routing congestion. So when you crawl the web or search peer-to-peer systems, I mean, this is searching, right? When you want to maintain a well-connected topology, again, in a peer-to-peer system, or you want to go even one step further, this is very recent work, how do you enhance a network with topology awareness? These are questions of design. Okay, so this is roughly the range of questions that you would have in networking. And let me right away abstract the first one, routing congestion, and we abstract it like this. So you have a graph on n nodes and order n links, because it's a sparse graph. And you want to write one unit of flow between each pair of nodes for a total flow of n squared. And you want to do optimal routing. So there are n links, and the total flow is n squared. So in the worst case, there could be a link that carries flow n squared. In the best case, the flow is very evenly distributed. So you want to do optimal routing so that you minimize the load on the most congested link. So here's a question that comes up, and in fact this was a question that was asked explicitly in networking, because if you see edge congestion under shortest path routing on regular random graph, and here are the edges, and this is how much traffic they carry, you know, it's more or less a flat distribution. But if you look at power law graphs or even, you know, these real networks, there was a sharp peak. So the question was, you know, how fast is this peak growing? Is the network growing, you know, to be a monopoly, like these large nodes, to what rate are they attacking traffic and so on? So it turns out the relevant metric, okay, so what do you measure in this network if you want to answer such a question? So it turns out that the relevant metric is whether the network has bottlenecks or not, and bottlenecks we formalize as conductance, which I'll just say for once, I think most people know it. So the conductance of a set, so you take a bipartition of the graph and there are two sets defined, and you take the number of edges crossing the two partition classes, and you divide by the number of edges in the smallest class, and you minimize. So this is like a relative measure of connectivity, and you minimize overall subsets. Okay, so that's the conductance of a graph, and it's good. It's good means, you know, congestion scales nicely, searching scales nicely. So it's good if it is 1 over poly log n, when n is the number of vertices of the graph. Okay. So here is just an example of how this might come up, and it hasn't been observed. So in wireless networks, for example, around 2000, they started with a very famous paper of Gupta and Kumar, and then there have been other papers. All these have won like best papers awards in networking, where they say that, you know, wireless networks, the congestion, the throughput doesn't scale well. Okay, so it was a major revelation from the networking community that throughput doesn't scale well. And I'm saying that it's a, you know, natural thing, though it has been phrased in different words, because by nature, all networks that are embedded in two-dimensional space are going to have very bad separators. right? So you could have like a square root of n by square root of n grid. There are n edges inside, you know, one cap. There are square root of n edges going across a link. You get conductance 1 over square root of n. That's bad. That's not 1 over poly log n. Okay. So it's, you know. Okay, but let's go back to the issue here. So the point is now that conductance, since in general n people
Lena,
think
there's
yes.
a question.
Yes, sir.
So is there any planar graph that can have this good graph?
No, there's a theorem. So I gave an example, but there's a theorem by Lipton and Darden of the late 70s or early 90s that all planar graphs have, you know, conductance 1 over square root of n. So that's obvious. Thanks. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. So, but this is NP complete to compute in general. So here's the second proposal, that the second eigenvalue of a certain normalization of the adjacency matrix, which I call the lazy random walk. So you put one half on the diagonal and one over degree in all the entries. So it's just a normalization, you know? Closely approximate conductance. This is a theorem of Jerome and Sinclair, or Alon of the early mid-80s. Okay, so that the second eigenvalue is bounded from above and from below in terms of conductance. So, and in particular, if you have a bound on the second eigenvalue, you also have a bound on conductance. So now we see that it is important to study the second, or in general, the largest eigenvalues of these graphs. And there's also an additional benefit that the eigenvectors associated with the largest eigenvalues are shadows of sets with bad conductance. This is a very widely known method in Lorentz principal component analysis, singular invariant decomposition, latent semantic indexing, and so on. So if you know, if this is kind of the worst cut of the graph, what you're going to see on the second eigenvector is mostly pluses on one end and minuses on the other end. And what's good about the second, you know, the principal eigenvalues is okay. But what's good about the principal eigenvalues is that they're computationally soft, right? So you can do million-node sparse graphs in a matter of minutes, 10, 15, 20 minutes on MATLAB, right? So
you can
study. Pardon me?
Can you remind me what the approximation factor was? Was it log n or square root of n or for the conductance versus spectral method? I think probably less than.
This one?
No, for the. So that gives the square root because of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess this is. This was the first interesting experiment, I think, that we did. So we actually went and we measured the principal eigenvalues of the internet at the layer of autonomous systems, and we didn't measure just the second one. So the first one is going to be 1. So we didn't measure just, you know, the second one, because, you know, it's a real network, there might be anomalies. We measured several, right, the first 100. And we measured them when the network had 700 nodes, 3,000 nodes, and 15,000 nodes. And so you see these plots. And what is interesting is that, you know, as the network scaled, the high-end profile of its spectrum didn't really shift. So it didn't become any larger. So it seems that, you know, So the high eigenvalues you make constant, and if you compare with what you would get from a random graph, and it's not important what model, but because we know that random graphs have good conductance properties and also sort of constant spectrum, so what you would get from a random graph is again, you know, for the same values is again that the spectrum doesn't shift, right? But it is a little bit lower, okay? So what does this say?
So what is the y-axis?
So the y-axis is the value of the eigenvalue. The eigenvalue goes from zero to one, but you know, okay? And these are the eigenvalues sorted according to their values, right? So the important thing is that these plots, you know, they don't shift upwards. The network does not become more congested with time. kinds of graphs would have a line that is above?
That's
yes.
even larger.
What kinds of structures would move that line above where the inner end is?
Oh, okay. So, okay. So, I'll come back to this. So there are models where these lines. Yeah, I mean, if you put geometry in the preferential attachment model, you get very bad separators, for example. Yeah.
So conductance and AES graphs is sort of a funny combination because a link in an AES graph doesn't say anything about the bandwidth available that exists between those two AES.
We can take it offline, but it actually works in favor of my argument because the links that would have more conductance, right, are the central links, right? So by what is the bandwidth? So my assumption is that all bandwidths are the same, right? Okay, so all bandwidths are the same. And despite the fact that all bandwidths are the same, right, I show that there are no bad cuts. Now, what happens in reality is that the bandwidths in the real core are even higher. So I'm pessimistic in my assumption that all the links do not have, yeah, so I had to convince the referee several rounds. Okay. So what did we get with this picture, right? So if the high-end spectrum doesn't shift, then congestion scales nicely, right? And just as a parenthesis, it's also another view of the small world phenomenon. So what does the small world phenomenon say? It says that you have small diameter but high clustering coefficient. So you're comparing apples and oranges somehow, right? So this one says that yes, of course, we have small diameter because you have an expander graph, so you don't have the spectrum is not shifting, so the diameter is going to be small, but it's going to be it is slightly more clustered than a random graph, so high clustering coefficient. It's a more unified point of view, right? So this is where we started. Now, what do you want to do in networking? I think for several networks, you want to measure and study the highest end spectrum of real networks. You understand the full algorithmic implications. You want to develop models where conductance and the second eigenvalue are variables, right? Because you want to test and simulate algorithms under different network behavior, right? So you want to say, what if the network has good conductance, which in one case we observed it did, but what if the conductance changes? So this is in this point of view of the world, I don't want to model the network exactly, but I want to say, if you have a new version of BitTorrent and you want to test it, where are you going to test it on? So I can give you, a variety of models, and you can know under good network behavior or bad network behavior how to test BitTorrent. This is not, what you're going to do if you want to test, a new version of TCP. If you want to test a new version of TCP, you have to have traffic, you have to have link behavior, you have to. So it depends, right? So this is what I mean, that the two worlds can coexist. And then once you understand what is the significance of this metric for network behavior, you want to develop algorithms that in fact improve the conductance of a graph, and that you're not going to do on the BGP layer, but you can definitely apply it in peer-to-peer networks, and there is strong evidence that peer-to-peer networks are trying to do this anyway. So, and what you want to do in theory, the same thing, but instead of real networks, you want to have network models, right? So what are the network models we're going to use? Now, Walter might object very much, but again, I'm saying I'm talking of this end of the world. You don't have to do it, if you're going to simulate the router level internet. So suitable network models in one shot. So network models, we can think of them as microscopic, long known economics as microscopic, right? So where you're actually trying to simulate the very primitives that the network is doing as it's growing. In CS, they're known as hot, and I think Raisa is going to give a talk in a couple of days on these models. And then there's macroscopic, which are they're like Ernst & Schwenning, you know? You assume that, you know, what's happening in the network is the aggregate of all kinds of microscopic primitives. I would put the preferential attachment model in this category, you know? So, all right, so let me just say very, very, very fast two results on macroscopic models, and then see how much further we can get. So for the evolutionary model of growth with preferential attachment, and where the minimum degree is at least 2, right? So we said that the model of preferential attachment is you, when you go to Sarai's and it attaches to each degree with probability proportion, to each vertex with probability proportional to its degree, and so on, okay? And again, you know, in order to make a meaningful statement about conductance, the minimum degree has to be at least 2, because if it's 1, you get a 3, and that has bad separators. And if the attaching degree is at least 2, that means the average degree is 4, which happens to be the degree of the internet at the level of autonomous systems. And then there's the configurational model where you just have a target degree sequence, and I don't need to explain all this, okay? So you just try to construct a random graph that has this degree sequence, and for technical reasons, you impose a couple of conditions on the degree sequence, namely that the smallest degree is at least 3, which makes the graph almost surely connected, and that the largest degree is square root of n. So that you avoid certain multiplicities. It's a fairly general set of degree sequences. That's the standard configurational model. And the bounds on conductance from these models that we have is that for preferential attachment, conductance is constant. And in fact, it's constant for minimum degree at least 2, so average degree 4, which greatly improved previous. What? Yes?
Can you define conductance, and what do you exactly mean by conductance?
Conductance is, I went very fast because I'm embarrassed speaking in front of David Andrews about conductance. It's the minimum. Okay. Okay. Minimum overall S subset of V such that edges in S are less than edges in the complement of S. Okay, so first you have to define the conductance of a set. So this is your graph. So you take a set S and you count how many edges cross the boundary of the set, and then you count how many edges are inside S and inside S complement, okay? And then you take the smaller of the two, okay? So it's the set that has the smaller probability distribution in stationarity. So this measures the ergodic flow out of the set in stationarity divided by the probability that the set has in stationarity. So it's a measure of connectivity in the graph, and you minimize overall sets.
Is this anything to do with electrical conductance, or is that not at all?
Does it, David?
No,
it doesn't.
It's an unfortunate choice of words, because you had this previous connection between random walk-on graphs.
Yeah. Well, there is something that some electrical things that have to do with random walk-on graphs, but apparently not conductors. Okay, so the point here is that for the standard random graph models, the conductance is good, right? And moreover,
David, you have a new name for it.
Pardon me? No, we're not going to change the name of conductance.
You saw the Giga constant.
Yeah.
For one can actually attribute almost the right person.
Okay, so the point is that the conductance is good. Moreover, it is good as long as the degree minimum degree becomes 3 or, you know, 2 or 4, right? Which is exactly what. So it's as if, you know, subconsciously ISPs know that they have to maintain some kind of average degree or 4 or 5, you know, to ensure some good conductance. You know, connections of ISPs between themselves are not cheap connections. All right. So and then there are the corresponding theorems about congestion, that, you know, congestion scale smoothly for these categories of random graphs. And now, okay, so for the standard models, you know, if you believe them, or but we had to start somewhere, the conductance is good. Can we have models where we conductance varies or the spectral gap varies? And so for example, here is a model where geometry becomes important. So a new node arrives and there is an underlying geometry, let's say, you know, it's just planar geometry, and a vertex attaches to vertex I with probability proportional to its degree and inversely proportional to its distance from I raised to some alpha power, okay? So, and the normalization factor. So now geometry is important. So when alpha is zero, you get the preferential attachment model, and when alpha is very large, then geometry is by far the most important factor. And so what do you get here? So there are two results. So myself and my student have done many experiments, and actually Flaxman, Fries, and Vera, actually that should be 0.7, actually have formal proofs that as this exponent alpha increases, so when alpha is zero, we said we had the preferential attachment model where, and this is the second eigenvalue, where the second eigenvalue is constant. Okay, so that's what it should be, right? And then, you know, as the alpha increases and geometry takes over, you start having models that have very bad conductance, and the interesting thing what they showed is that you still have parallel graphs, but with very bad conductance. And once you see such plots, then perhaps they are meaningful to networking people, because you tell them, look, have this model, and in simulation, generate topologies for alpha 0, alpha 1, alpha 2, and alpha 3, and test your protocols under these conditions.
And it's maybe worth pointing out that actually the degree distribution is independent of alpha, or at least the power in the degree distribution.
It's not independent of alpha.
The power is also dependent on alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
can you also be a little bit more specific? So what do you mean by distance? What do you mean by distance?
The AS graph, I wouldn't apply this model because there are not geographical distances, right? Plus the AS graph, I'm completely convinced, is in this area because I've measured it. I keep measuring it. You know, the added value doesn't increase. So, you know, there's no point. There's no geometry, right? So again, now I'm placing, you know, in this end, like fitness, like, you know. Okay. So, there is something I'm finished with, routing congestion and how, you know, conductance and spectral metrics are relevant. All right, let's go a little bit on searching. Should I go to searching? Yeah, I'll do it real fast. And so what's the issue of searching? So suppose we have not the World Wide Web, but let's have a content distribution network, even though this is the picture of, you know, something completely different. And you search by doing a random walk, which you often do. It's an acceptable method of searching. And occasionally, when you look at the node, you look at all his neighbors. Okay, you look at the node and you look at all his neighbors. And so the question is, can you sample in log n time, where n is the size of the network, or can you visit a constant fraction of the nodes in linear amount of time? And this very tightly relates to what we know in theoretical computer science as cover times or mixing times. And it's well known that whenever you get conductance bounded below by this nice 1 over point log n, all these questions can be answered to the positive. So for graphs for which you have good conductance, you can do nice things in searching. So the thing that came out that was interesting from this work is the fact that we observe that you can have some, you know, once you visit the node, you visit all his neighbors. And actually, okay, so here is another way of searching. So again, you know, let's think about content distribution networks, which is
question.
More likely. Yes.
A good assumed graph is
n vertices that have degree square root of n. So a few nodes have very high degree. These are the super peers. And all the other vertices have low degree. But okay, that's the simplest case, but it works for any parallelogram. Then here is what you can do. Then, and you search by doing local replication, right? So every node remembers no longer what he knows, but he remembers what his neighbors have. Okay, he doesn't have to keep the content, he just has to keep, you know, the information that I have this file. So then, so then what happens is that the random walk will take you to these nodes that have square root of n degree much more frequently than it will take you to the low degree nodes, and that way you're going to get a lot of information. So you can discover omega n, so a constant fraction of the vertices, in about square root of n log n steps, right? So this is something that came as a byproduct, and it says that, you know, a little bit of hierarchy helps, which is what networks do anyway. So a little bit of hierarchy helps. And once you start thinking about, you know, one long random walk versus a short random walk with local flooding, so I think of these steps of looking at the neighbors as local flooding. So the point is that, you know, how much load are you going to incur in the network, right? So load means that, you know, how many queries, right? So how many nodes are you going to visit? So you have the choice of one long walk versus one short walk with local flooding. Then you can start playing other games, right? So then you can change flooding, which is bounded depth breadth first search, versus a more general search scheme where you make your bounded depth breadth first search sparser, and you save some of the queries to move them perhaps to a very distant place in the network. And start another bounded depth breadth first search in that area. It's a generalized step search scheme, and it turns out that this scheme has, you know, much better, you know, performance than any of the, you know, particular random walk or flooding and so on. So, just to show you that, you know, starting from that something very small like measuring the second eigenvalue, you know, can take you very far. You start thinking about, you know, what are the implications in networking. And then I want to come to the last part, which has to do with good design of networks. So the question here is, you know, once you believe that that connectivity in a topology is important, you're asking how do you maintain well-connected topology? And in fact, how do you enhance a network with topology awareness? This is my last topic. I'll try to spend 5 minutes because this is sort of a recent work.
Fine. Huh? We have tons of time.
I have tons of time, okay. So how do you maintain a well-connected topology? So let's talk about the case of peer-to-peer networks. Okay, so what is a peer-to-peer network? Right, so it's a distributed, decentralized. We can think of it as distributed, decentralized. It has n nodes. Let's say it's a deregular graph. It is roughly a deregular graph. I mean, for simplicity, for this talk. And the point is that each node knows a bit. Okay, so if we have n nodes, each node knows his address, so he has longer bits. So you can assume that his computational power is something like poly log n. So he cannot know anything more than, you know, polylog n neighborhood around itself, right? So every node has very local knowledge, and what these networks do is that they search for content, okay? So, and again, you know, there are two extremes. So this is the guy that initiates the query. So there are, what am I doing here? So there are two extreme schemes. Either you do flooding, or as I said, you know, you can do random walk, right? In both cases, it's a good thing to maintain a well-connected topology, right? A graph with good conductance or a random graph. It's obvious that if, you know, for example, the network is disconnected, it's not a good thing, you know, to search for content in a network that's disconnected in all kinds of pieces. And by the same argument, it's not good to have, you know, small bottlenecks. So, and there is evidence that networks are actually trying to do this. So what we were able to measure is a Nutella client. And in a Nutella client, there were, you know, in one client, there are between 5 and 30 requests new connections per second per client. So you have other people that know about you and they're telling you all the time, can you please drop one of your neighbors and connect to me? And 1% of these requests are satisfied and existing links are dropped and replaced by other links. And that means that, you know, to me, that the network is working in panic mode, trying to randomize, you know, to avoid network configurations with bottlenecks and trying to maintain, you know, high conductance. So is this a reasonable strategy? So the first who addressed this formally was Kupfer. Actually, it was not Fries, it was Dyer. Yeah, Alan Fries always corrects me, you know, that's not me, that's Dyer. Okay, Dyer, Kupfer, and Greenhill. And they showed, okay, so how are we gonna model this as theoreticians? So here is a configuration of the network, and here is the bad cut, and we're trying to avoid it. So you can, you know, how can you formalize replacement of links? Okay, so two links drop, and they're replaced by two other links, right? So that maintains the degree. It's the standard switch, right? So drop, drop, and it maintains the degree, right? And about, you know, obviously if you, you know, hopefully if you do this a few times, you will reach a random graph. And that's what they actually established, that this Markov chain is rapidly mixing. That's, you know, perhaps justifying that what networks do is a good thing, but there's a small issue that in reality, you cannot assume that, you know, random links that perhaps don't know each other because every node has only very local understanding of the network. How do they know each other to exchange each other? So we replace this chain with a much more local chain. Okay, so only a path of length 3. So definitely these four clients know about each other. They can
is
do a switch.
Is a constant degree assumption realistic? I mean, some people sit at universities, they have the big backbone they can sort of hijack, and others sit at home over a phone network and probably wouldn't do very well with high connectivity.
No, the degree assumption is okay. The bandwidth assumption is not okay.
So people, even if they have low bandwidth, still maintain a high degree?
They can, but the network will realize and will give them very low priority. So actually, really, at least as well, the degrees that of the networks that I've seen vary between 6 and 30. And I think Emule had a few nodes, super servers that had like 100. But I mean, they're small. You don't go to the thousands. So it's okay, so we did these very local switches, and we could show that, you know, still you get rapid mixing with, you know, with these very local switches, which is actually what the network does. I have to say something about this. The rapid mixing results, both are, I mean, they're polynomial, but they're horrible. Okay, so they show mixing in time, maybe n to the 28, and we show maybe n to the 48. I mean, these are unacceptable. So, but this chain actually mixes rapidly in practice, and you can not only you don't only use it, you know, for peer-to-peer networks. You can use it, you know, to generate any degree sequence because it's just a general flip, right? So you start with a graph that has a degree sequence. You do this flip, and you still maintain the degree sequence. So this is practically, you know, this appears to be mixing rapidly in practice. This one does not. I mean, it takes days. You only do these local switches to start from, not days, but many, many hours, to start from a really disconnected, you know, really badly connected network and reach well-connected network. I would skip, perhaps I should skip, I'm going to skip this part, because I want to talk, okay. So, which brings us to the last point, that if you had some topology awareness, so if, for example, okay, so suppose your network was like this, so it had a bad bottleneck, right? And these links were aware that they were the links that belonged to the bad bottleneck. That would have made the job of mixing rapidly much faster, because you wouldn't have wasted your time, you know, doing exchanges on this part of the network which was well connected, right? So what you would have done is that you would have kept, you know, this know, perhaps around this critical limit. Okay? So this is one example where, you know, being aware that the link crosses a bad path is a good thing. Here's another example where topology awareness is important. Suppose again your link has a bad path and you do search by flooding. So you want to spend, let's say, 10,000 queries. So you want to query 10,000 nodes looking for something. And suppose you start here, right? So if links are aware, so here are different links, okay? And increasingly, sort of this link says, I'm okay, and this says, I'm going towards a critical cut, and this says, I'm really going towards a critical cut, right? So then this budget of 10,000 that you would have had, you would have said, okay, I'm going to spend 5,000 on this part of the network, so maybe 6,000, and I'm going to save 4,000 and forward them, and I'm going to save 4,000 and forward them, and once you cross all these critical links, right, then you're in a different area, and this is where you start another search, right? So there are many, it's very important, for example, in network coding to have topology awareness. So it's and moreover, it's a natural thing. It's something that social networks have, you know, do anyway all the time. I have certain links. I know exactly how important my link is to Christian, my link is to Jennifer, my link is to my brother, you know, my link is to my child. I mean, okay, my link. Okay, so you're extremely aware, you know, what is the relative criticality of the links. And it would be important, you know, to have it in networking. So is it possible to enhance network with some kind of topology awareness? I guess the first who sort of indirectly addressed this is, or I saw it, is a work of Boyd, Diaconis, and Xiao in 2004. And they didn't frame it as topology awareness. So what they said is that they wanted the fastest mixing Markov chain on the graph. So they said that I have a graph, I'm going to do a random walk on this graph, and I want to change the weights of the links so that, you know, the stationary distribution is the same, but I mix as fast as possible, right? So that means that, you know, they wanted to push the second eigenvalue as far away from the first as possible. And of course, what you would do in this case, you know, you see here you have two clicks and you have a very bad gap. I mean, of course, you know, you wanted to maintain some kind of symmetry, but you wanted to gravitate towards the gap to cross it fast, right? So that's, so indirectly, you know, this method, you know, the link criticality that they were talking about, you know, it assigns higher weights to links that cross bad cuts, and they can write this problem as a semi-definite program, which definitely puts it in P, which is very nice. But of course, you cannot solve it in a so what we want to do is that we want to do this thing, but we want to do it in a distributed way, okay, fully distributed way for and practically efficient. Okay, so our first cut to address this, and there have been, you know, several other link criticality related problems that have been written as semi-definite programs since then, mostly coming from Boyd's, all coming from Boyd's group with different collaborators, I guess. So our first cut to this is that, okay, so instead of a, you know, semi-definite program, I'm just going to try to compute the principal eigenvectors. In fact, let me try to compute the second one in a distributed and asynchronous way, which is what a real, you know, distributed network would do, a peer-to-peer network would do. And so let me take, this is an experimental paper, and some of the facts we can prove and some we cannot. So how would you compute the second eigenvector? Suppose you have a regular graph, okay? So what you want to end up with is, what you hope to end up with is some numbers on the nodes that look like this, which separate one partition class from the other, and if a link minor power methods is you start with any vector, which is, if you're talking about a regular graph, which is perpendicular to the all ones vector, that's very easy to do, you know? So every link puts a plus a and minus a at its endpoints. That's very easy. And then, you know, the algebra says that every node, I mean, if you do the lazy random walk, every node, what does it do? For all the links, that, so every node does one half for to compute xi t plus one, one half what it has, plus one over two d what its neighbors have, which translates to sum over all edges incident to sum over all edges incident to the node xi plus xj divided by 2d. All right, so if you repeat this many times, this is simultaneously for all nodes, then you will converge to the second eigenvector. Okay, how about asynchronously? So asynchronously, what we did is that instead of going through one round, all the links, all the nodes do this computation, we were just picking random edges in many different random ways, and each edge was just averaging the weights of its endpoints. So what that was doing is that it was maintaining perpendicularity to the all ones vector, which is critical, okay? But we were doing the whole thing asynchronously. And, okay, so experimentally, you know, you definitely got to the second eigenvector. This is for the simple case, so where we had one, you know, just two partitions, but, you know, we played with other cases. The hardest part in this, well, there are several parts that are hard. The hardest part is maintaining numerical stability. So what happens as you're doing these averages is because the second I'm finished?
Not quite.
Yeah, 2 minutes. That's what I do. That's what I need. So what happens, because the second eigenvalue is smaller than one, this vector xi will be shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So in practice, so actually what you should be doing is that every step, every time you apply the power method, you should be normalizing by the length of the vector. And how do you do this in a distributed way? Okay. So we had to do all kinds of patches and we made it work. So we can prove that you converge, but without the normalization part. I mean, so if you have perfect numerical stability, we can prove that it converges, but we don't know how to overcome numerical stability, and of course there's issues of nodes failing and so on and so forth. And again, you know, this will find only the second eigenvector, so we will only find, you know, maybe one cut, but maybe the graph has, you know, three, four cuts, and, you know, while the void method would simultaneously identify all these cuts. So, okay, so here is my point that about this last part, that, you know, spectral methods have been so successful in so many different areas, you know, in mathematics, in data mining, in engineering, you know, we can compute them in MATLAB. So it's hard to imagine that one way or the other they will not find their ways in networks, okay? So, and it might not be, you know, universally that BitTorrent is going to start computing second eigenvectors, okay? So it might be smaller networks, it might be, you know, but I think it's a completely obvious way that we're going to go. It's just a matter who will get there first. And I wanted to end with where I started, which is I just wanted to make a case today about spectral methods, and let me come back to this transparency. So now spectral methods is something that, you know, we come closer and closer to understanding. This is another metric that, so associativity, dissociativity, non-degree correlations, you know, joint degree distributions, which has been measured but has not been understood at all, its impact in network performance. How do we construct these graphs? How do we construct these graphs at random, and so on? So perhaps, you know, in addition to topology-aware networks, that's what we're doing right now. This is one example of a good way to go. And again, oh, no, I think I should stop here.